Richard Bell from the team of Branson, Carson Sestouli. This is Fangraphs Audio, my guest on this edition of Fangraphs Audio, making his weekly appearance as a lead prospect analyst for Fangraphs.com, Kylan McDaniel. Earlier this week, I'm recording this on a Friday, earlier this week on a Wednesday, Kylan McDaniel released for the benefit of all readers everywhere, of all literate people, is what I mean to say. He released the sortable draft board at Fangraphs.com, a tool so that readers might become more well acquainted with those players who are eligible to be selected in the Major League Amateur Draft, which occurs this next Monday, Monday, June 8th, that is. The sortable draft board is it's a very useful feature, is really what it is. One can find there Kylan McDaniel's own rankings for all of the various college and high school players, those same players' present and future values on the 20-80 scouting scale, other scouting information, and quite a bit of biographical information as well. It's very useful, is the point. I discussed that sortable draft board with Kylie, what led him to create it, and what use he thinks it might have for readers. We also discuss a different sort of draft board, and that is the sort of draft board you would find in the actual draft room during the Major League Draft, a room that is filled with scouting directors and cross-checkers, perhaps some area scouts, and other assorted personnel affiliated with whatever the relevant Major League team is. Kylan McDaniel has appeared in a couple of those, and he relates in some detail, some enjoyable detail, some of the logistics of the draft process, both leading up to draft day and draft day itself. What else he's able to reveal is some anecdotes from his time doing that sort of thing, one of which concerns the Dodgers and one of their strategies during the draft.
The Dodgers are famous for every year they let Tommy Lasorda make one pick, and they'll get on and be like, "The Dodgers are the greatest team in existence." They pick draft ID, and then he'll, like, mess the number up and then mess the name up and be like, "Go Dodgers!" and screw Don Mattingly.
It is Fangraphs Audio. It does feature lead prospect analyst Kylan McDaniel, and it begins right now.
The letdown of Carson, also known as anything with Carson.
Yeah!
Nailed him!
Yeah.
This is like the roast. I'm like the Jeff Ross of this podcast.
The roasted. Oh, have you seen the previews for Jeff Ross's the roast that he does in the prison in Texas?
I'm kind of amazed he hasn't done that yet, because it's like, it's become clear the last few years after his show got canceled, like, his only value is doing roast stuff, so it's like, let's go find a new way to do it rather than waiting once a year when it's on TV.
Yeah, well, he went to, I guess he's had a live show where he goes and he does roasts, you know, whatever, theaters, but he did one at a Texas prison.
Yeah, I believe it was is it one of the ones Johnny Cash did?
Well, that is Folsom Prison, and this one was like Bachelor Prison, blah, it begins with a B, I think. Anyway, interesting exercise. He didn't die from it. I think he went on stage.
As far as we know, that'd be quite a ratings bonanza.
He went on stage and he said, "Where are my murderers at?" And then three guys in the front row raised their hand. And he was like, "Ha ha 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 ha."
Very funny, guys. Very funny.
He also had this line with this guy who was sort of a younger, portly kid, young adult. And he said to this guy, this inmate, he said, you're a strange type in that you both look like a child and a child molester, all in the same person.
Wow, this has really gotten racy right off the bat.
Good dark. I'm just quoting, just like, not unlike the Guardian paper, as long as you're quoting it for reasonable purposes, then it's fine.
Is that the one that's like the New York Post of Britain with all of the stupid titles and puns?
No, that's maybe the The Guardian's one of the, it's like.
I'm thinking the Daily Mail. I think that's
the Daily
one.
Mail. I think yeah, sounds right. Do you want to talk about Kelly? Let's talk about. Listen.
yes, I'm listening now.
Here's what I want to say to you is, there are frequently times when we talk, either on air or off of it, when you will make a comment that is designed. I don't know what the design is. I don't know what the purpose is, but you'll be like, "Yeah, so just get off talking to important, like, seven GMs at once." And
we were on a group text, but we decided to call.
Yeah, it's just no big deal. Just me and Theo Epstein and Theo Epstein's clone that people don't know about, but who helps him run the Cubs.
I really enjoy this impression of me.
Yeah. And I'll be like, why are you telling me that? And then I will say to you, Kylie, and I've said this to you on here too, I said, do you want a medal? Or maybe I will say, how many medals do you want? What kind of medal? I would like, before you praise yourself, however,
uh-oh,
Kylie, I would like simply to state that I think you have done a good job with what I guess is now known as the sortable draft board, where people can look at the work you've done leading up to, you know, doing draft rankings, and they can learn more about those players who are likely to be taken in, I guess, 77 guys on the board right now. That's roughly two rounds with the supplemental round included.
Yeah, it'll be a full three rounds pretty soon.
Okay.
With sort of the full data like that, and then probably another round or two of guys with less complete data, but just giving you the names to look for in those rounds.
Right. Yeah, that was the one of your mock drafts, or it was one of the rankings you gave. You extended to the reader the opportunity. You facilitated the opportunity to, what was it? It was to haphazard.
I think it was irresponsibly.
Oh, yeah.
I've deputized you to irresponsibly do the rest of the draft.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Right. And which I think is great. That's a great opportunity.
Yeah. You really connected with deputize because it showed that I was more intelligent than you thought, and irresponsible because you like the idea of that, if not the action.
I like being given allowed the opportunity to be irresponsible. Yeah,
which is why you're running around your house naked with your underwear on your head because your wife's gone.
That's right. Yeah. My wife. She's in France. She is in France.
Yeah, I should also say before I praise myself that there would be plenty of praise for myself, trust me, and most of it coming from me.
Yeah.
That David Appleman, I said a couple weeks ago, like, hey, what if we do this? And he was like, I think I see what you're talking about. Yeah, let's do that. Get back to me in a week when you got some data to work with, and we'll talk about what it'll look like. And then it appears he took basically a day or two and made this thing that, you know, internet has been covering the draft mostly behind a paywall for like 10 years. No one's even tried anything like this before. And I was like, hey, what about this? He's like, yeah, I'll spick and span this thing up in 24 hours, no problem. So I feel like he deserves some kudos.
Yeah, who in addition to signing our paychecks, although he doesn't really actually do that, he uses his service. Also what happens, I think he's the only programmer at the site. So if he dies, man, we got to have a weekend at Birdie situation
where he's programming as a corpse.
Uh-huh.
We'll sit at the retreat. We'll all be sitting in a circle. We're like, we need to fix these sortable whatever thing. And we look at him, and Dave Cameron raises his hand up. He's like, I got it, guys. Don't worry about it.
I'm sure there are a number of reasons why you can tell us this is valuable. I mean, it's a very simple reason is it lays out, it ranks the players and allows one to see that, which is something that has existed before.
Very common, in fact. Just the ranking of the players is pretty standard.
Yeah, right. Now there are three tabs. Another thing that is probably less common is just having right here both the present and the future value figures associated with the players. So the rankings would suggest that, but I think that you've addressed this before, and it's something that's not lost on other of our writers, which is rankings are fine, but also developing some mechanism for grouping players into tiers is also valuable, right? So you know that after you know, when you go from Dansby Swanson and Brendan Rodgers to Alex Bregman, at number three, Alex Bregman, of course, and I think it helps if we cite where these guys are from. Alex Bregman, of course, is the LSU shortstop. There is a division there. There is a division. Maybe not a huge one, but it's probably bigger than between Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker, who's below him, and Carson Fulmer from Vanderbilt. I don't know where Kyle Tucker's from, although I could find out, actually, it turns out.
Yeah, it's a high school in Tampa.
High school in
right,
Tampa.
Like right next to where I used to live.
Okay, all right. So they having the future values available. Now, that leads to one question, one preliminary question, sort of. I noticed
What's the deal with rankings?
Well, I noticed that for almost all of the players whose names are included on the sortable draft board right now, Almost all of them receive a present value of 20, which is to say that if they were playing in a major league game, they would be pretty clearly the worst player on the field. I'm wondering what typically how you do handle, though, the present values of players who are amateurs, in this case high school or collegiate players.
Well, yeah, and also, this is the first time I've used present value on the site before, so I feel like I should kind of explain what that means.
Okay, yeah, that's great. That's great.
So, obviously, for, like, big league players, you could say, you know, I don't know, if you could say Yasiel Puig is a present 70, future 8. Maybe he's not a great example, but a guy that's up for, like, a year or two will have a gap between those two numbers.
Chris Bryant might.
Yeah, he would be, like, a present 60, future 70, something like that. So if you're in, say, AA, AAA, and you're like, say a Carlos Correa, Corey Seager type guy, maybe they'd be like a present 45, future 65, and you say, oh, 45, that's already like a backup platoon guy, almost everyday guy. Well, yeah, but when you're an elite guy, if you're not almost everyday quality, that's why they haven't called you up yet. If we're pretty sure you're already at 50, that's when you get the guys sort of forcing their way up before service time would dictate. So there's a little bit of reading how good I think they would be, which we've seen in recent years. The gap from AAA to the big leagues is a little tough to tell. But also there's a little bit of reverse engineering. Like, they haven't called him up yet. He's only been there for a week, so he's probably not quite ready to play every day in the big leagues. You can kind of figure that out. And so some of the best prospects in AA would probably be a 40. Now, here's the other thing is I use 20, and then the next step up is 40. Now, technically, there should be a step between that of 30. But the way the scale works is 40 is, you know, bench player, like some of the last guys on a big league roster. 35 is up, down, emergency guy, is up if somebody gets hurt. 30 is useless, won't get called up, minor league filler. And then 20 is, a prospect that will be better. And so 20 is prospect, 40 is the lowest prospect grade or current big league value. I don't use 30 or 35 for present value, unless it's a future 35. But in that case, we're talking about an emergency guy that is already an emergency guy, and I'm probably never writing about him. So, like, there was somebody that asked Thomas Eshelman. He's the only guy I think that had one risk on the 1 to 5 scale, and he's a future 45, meaning like a fifth starter type, you know, give or take the range of possibilities. I have him as a 20 currently. He'd probably be a 30 or 35. Like, he could probably be an up-down emergency guy at this point. I don't think he could be a, you know, spot starter guy that actually has an actual role, just because college starter to big league starter is a big gap. But the guys that I gave present 42s were all advanced college pitchers who could be relievers right now, and they have a present 40 indicating they could be a sixth or seventh inning reliever right now. And those are the guys that got the 40. And if there was a super advanced hitter, I'm thinking like Pedro Alvarez when he was a draft eligible guy, he might be a present 40, but I'm not even sure I would have given Chris Bryant when he was a draft prospect a present 40. So that would be very rare to suggest.
It require a lot.
Yeah, this guy could go straight from college to being a useful big league piece at some point. So it's basically reserved for relievers, but when you get to AA and AAA, it can give you an idea of how quickly the guy will be called up as a, you know, proxy for his talent.
Right. Now, Eshelman, if I'm not mistaken, what, a right-hander out of Fullerton, is that right?
Yep.
And Eshelman is interesting. I think, I forget what his walk rate, but I think he walks zero people, something like that, right?
It's real low. I want to say he walked like 8 guys in a complete season as a sophomore.
Right. Yeah. And so now is that a type of player based on the fact that maybe he doesn't have a lot of physical projection left. Is that right?
Yeah, he's kind of maxed out. Okay. And on the right day, you'll see some 55 pitches out of him, but it's mostly average to solid average stuff. So it's not overwhelming.
But he has excellent command.
Yeah, some guys would say above average big league command right now. I'll call it present average, just because, like I said, that's a very big gap to suggest that this guy could, you know, trick a big league hitter right now when he's only faced college hitters before. But he's definitely in sort of the ballpark.
Right. And is that the sort of player who's likely to profile in the manner that you're suggesting, where he would have some big league value, just owing mostly to that command?
Yeah, if a guy had, say a high school guy projects to have that sort of size and stuff, he would be looked at as he should go to college guy, he'd sign for, you know, 100, 200,000. But the fact that he can perform at a very high level at the best, you know, college teams for 3 years. Now you've sort of proven your command enough and health and all that sort of thing that you can say, all right, this guy could be, say, Mike Leake might be like a reasonable comparison. He's obviously bigger than Mike Leake and will move a little slower, but there's a chance to be that sort of level of player.
Okay. Another question. Like, I see some information included here in the sortable draft board. For example, the range of that he might go in the draft, the number in the mock draft. These seem to be, and you've indicated this before, these numbers seem to rely on information that could be changing, especially, you know, as we get close to the draft. We're recording this on a Wednesday. The draft is on Monday, so that's just 5 days or so. And I'm curious, I wouldn't necessarily expect it to be updated every moment that you receive new information, but do you have plans? Do you have plans to update this in the meantime? And B, what do you regard as the utility of the draft board after the draft is actually over?
Yes, I will update it. For example, I just tweeted about some information I got about the 47th guy on my list, Juan Hillman, that there's some teams looking at him in like the 28 to 42 range. Mm-hmm. And I had his range on here as 33 to 64, so a little lower than that. So I'll probably, the next time we update it, I'll edit him, you know, to be up, you know, 5 or 8 more picks on both of those numbers. But also when we're talking about sort of the top 50 prospects, my last mock will be probably the morning of the draft, and I'll do the entire comp rounds, which I think is, what, 42 picks? So at some point I feel like if I project 42 guys where I think they're going to go, I feel like that in combination with the range, even if the range hasn't been updated, gives you an idea. Like, all right, Kylie projected him to go 28th. He said his range starts at 26. It's probably going to be on the, you know, on the better end of that range if we had to guess. Yeah, I feel like those two things will combine to give you some information more than you would see explicitly from other places. And it would be sort of geared to those sort of top 50 guys, the ones that matter and will, you know, go on day one at the higher picks.
Would you consider ever, if you were going to make some changes before – before the actual draft, would you consider writing an Instagram post to indicate the changes you have made?
Yeah, there's I guess we can let the cat out of the bag. People may assume by seeing this level of detail given to the draft, which isn't really the sort of biggest goal for Fangraphs. I think we focus more on the minor league stuff. Mm-hmm. That we'll do a form of this for the minor league players. And there's already been some behind the scenes talks with me and the Daves about how would we go about updating it in season? How would we indicate to people that something has changed? How will we keep track of the changes as they happen so we can sort of map where the guy's gone over time, which gives us obviously more ability to do research. So I see this as sort of the beginning point of that this can be the first draft class that has had, you know, that level of information that will be spit into this, you know, big professional database that will include, you know, big leaguers like Jorge Soler because they were prospects last year. So we have sort of a point in time. This is what we thought. We'll do this some version of this with July 2 guys this year, although probably not quite as detailed, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we'll be able to say he ranked, you know, 7th on talent according to Kylie when he signed as a 16-year-old out of the Dominican. And then as a 19-year-old, among the guys in his class, he's now, you know, 2nd. He's raised in that class. And I feel like that sort of thing is another thing that hasn't really been done before. Not that people aren't aware of that as a way to sort of measure a guy's progression, but no one's really tried to do that with a rigorousness and objective approach. And that's, I feel like that sort of fits with the Fangraphs hashtag brand.
You mentioned in your, in the post introducing the sortable draft board, you mentioned that an important thing for you, is adding transparency to the process. And one of your points is that you would like to do away with rankings, these are your words, that represent some unspoken combination of how good you think the player is, and then combined with the ranking of the player in the order of where you think he'll actually be drafted. And that's not shocking to me if we've seen draft lists before that it would be some combination of those two. But it seems for you it's important to separate those two and make them two discrete considerations.
Yeah, and I feel like there's, because sometimes people will ask me, hey, Kylie, you're the best. what are you doing next, and how do you think of all these great ideas? And I'll say, you know, thanks, Mom. So my general approach to these things are the things that bother me about prospect writing. I mean, I think people can see on Twitter I'm friends with most, if not all, of these sort of other prospect writers. We've all kind of worked in various places, see each other around, respect each other's work, all that sort of thing. But there's things that I saw that kind of bothered me in the way they were presented. Like, for instance, you know, oh, I think this guy's 20th best in the draft class, but I'm told he's going to go in the 50s, so I'll put him 38th and never explain those two numbers to anybody, and just, you know, you'll just figure it out. And I was like, well, that's dumb. Like, you could easily just tell people those two numbers, and they can kind of combine those at the level they want to. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of funny to me, but the internet sort of takes what they're given and runs with it as far as they can. And so they see that this guy is, you know, 38th on, you know, the board that they're reading before the draft. And they're like, oh, we're picking at 50. That was a great pick. When in fact it was a really great pick according to the actual person that wrote it. But they were trying to hedge to, you know, look good in the short term. And that's one of the articles I wrote before this process, that the idea that the only review process for draft rankings is right after the draft is kind of stupid, because we're supposed to be ranking guys based on, you know, how good they're going to be like 8 years from now. I realize that's a super long time horizon, that maybe the internet won't exist then and nobody's going to be going back and reading these lists then. But let's at least try to have some sort of consistency and integrity from the list on June to December when you do your list, and try to keep
your, when you do your minor league, your top prospect list.
Yeah, and I explained some guys that will, you know, jump all over the place, but it's almost a consistent kind of guy that jumps in a predictable sort of way. Mm.
Or maybe he's like, listening to a House of Pain song, and that's why he's jumping.
Carson Fulmer loves House of Pain, let me tell you. So I guess, yeah, the roundabout way is I find the stuff that bothers me, and then I find, like, sort of the way I would want to read stuff. Like, the presentation you see here is kind of what I laid out to happen. I was like, hey, what if it looked like this? He's like, okay, how does this look? I was like, all right, let's sort of tweak this a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I just take the things that bug me and the way I'd like to see them and hope that's the way people want to see it. And so far, it seems to have a pretty good track record. And sometimes it's different than what people have seen. And sometimes it's, almost exactly the same as what people are used to.
Right, okay. Well, we have the draft coming up. I guess what's a way that you envision people using the information? You said that, I mean, obviously there's draft coverage exists. Draft coverage exists because people are interested in the draft, in particular knowing probably if they're a fan of a team, knowing who the team is. Some people just, they like prospects. What do you sort of think of as the uses for this? And then as you continue to sort of build upon this model, what the uses might be?
I think it's a good tool for especially the casual fan that may not know the ins and outs of every single player, but is interested in who their team takes with the top couple picks and, you know, where they fall on that team's prospect list. Or just sort of general fans of baseball or fantasy people that just want to kind of know where people fall and all that sort of thing. I think I'd like to think, people can tell me if they think this, it's sort of the clearest way to understand the player without the filter of the person writing it imposing too much. You could read a comment and about the player on the report and see that I'm, you know, talking too much about when I saw him and what I think, and people disagree with me. But I'll be explicit and say, these are the tools. This is where I think he goes. This is how good I think he is. This is where I have him. And you can kind of move those sliders around, you know, balancing those various pieces of information the way you want. I'd like to think people can sort of, maybe in their own head or maybe explicitly, sort of make their own board and decide who they want. Because I'll see all the time people will say stuff like, you know, in response to the Juan Hillman tweet, like, oh, I was hoping, somebody said, oh, I hope the Blue Jays get him at, you know, 28 or wherever. And I'm thinking, like, that guy's basing that off of, you know, maybe seeing a couple clips of a video from an untrained eye, maybe reading one scouting report that may or may not have been correct. Like, they're kind of pinning their hopes, at least for a couple years, on their team and their players based on, you know, dubious information or a dubious process of coming to that conclusion. So I think, and this is one of the things I wrote in the first post I wrote when it came to Fangraphs, was the concept of there being this, like, you know, set of gatekeepers that keep the casual fan from understanding how this stuff works. Like, I have friends that know I've been doing this for years and still have no interest or no knowledge of how the draft works or how to tell if a guy has a good swing or whatever. I would like to make that easier to access, and that probably maps somewhat to me being an outsider early in my baseball career and sort of slowly working my way in to where I now have you know, enough experience and knowledge to where I can kind of translate some of this stuff.
Right, where maybe you view it more as a reader might. Is that the case?
Yeah, like I didn't get into baseball wanting to be a writer. Like, it isn't my greatest ambition to be doing this. Sorry, mm-hmm. Sorry, everybody. But while I'm doing it, like, my job isn't to pick the player and then, you know, my boss gets happy and we get a, you know, $1 million asset or whatever it is. Like, my job is to tell people what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'll still do, you know, the sort of scouty parts that are kind of deep within my psyche of, here's the best players, they were where I'd put him, and this is why I think this guy's wrong, this is why I put this guy here. But it's about presentation. And so I think sometimes, and I try to get away from this as much as I can, not so much of the shorthand of, you know, what you can fit in a tweet about a player. Like, my family will read my tweets and be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I think it's pretty clear, but of course, if you're new to baseball, you don't. And you could read a 3-sentence, you know, report on Phil Bickford and be like, I don't even know what that lingo means. Is that, what does 2+ pitches mean? Like, I don't get it. Like, it's hard. It's impenetrable for people that are kind of coming to it. And I want it to be easier. Even if you don't learn the 20/80 scale, you can just see like, oh, this guy's value is more tied into his fastball and his size and being very young. And this guy's more polished and, you know, value is more tied into command. You don't have to read the report. You can just look at the numbers and compare them and see, oh, this is more the kind of guy I like. And I think that level is important to give to the mainstream reader, but then also the super intense reader or the scout kind of following along, you know, for guys not in his area that he hasn't seen before, that guy can also get the amount of information he wants.
You did mention in your post that there's a difference between a college and a high school player who receive a 50 future value. Can you sort of expand upon that?
Yeah, I gave the example of Ian Happ, a college hitter from Cincinnati, and Daz Cameron, a high school hitter from Atlanta. They both have a 50 future hit grade tool, hit tool grade. But I guess the way I explained it was if they both, let's say, slightly exceed expectations in pro ball after one season, Daz Cameron could have his tool go from a 50 to a 60, and Ian Happ could have his go from a 50 to a 55. Because we already know, like, Happ has already performed twice on the Cape with wood bats. He's already performed in college ball. And so if he puts up ridiculous numbers, we kind of know what his limitations are because we've seen him hit well before. And so hitting well in pro ball isn't, like, shocking. We kind of know, we have enough data to kind of dial in where he's going to be. Like, the range of possibilities is narrower. Whereas Daz Cameron, we've only seen him against high school pitching before. And so if he goes and hits 380, I have him ranked, or like the tool is a 50, the same as Happ, but it could be a 20 that can't get out of A ball. It could be a 60 or maybe even more than that. Like, the tools are there to be that. There's a wider range of possibilities. So while they have the same tool grade, I think people know every 50 isn't exactly the same as every other 50, which is why I try to use the 50 plus and 45 plus to further differentiate players. But this is more like how you would value a player using a future value is one number. I'm trying to value all of their sort of offensive contact and plate discipline based abilities into one number. And I feel like it should be pointed out that high school players 50 means 30 to 70 and college players 50 means 40 to 60.
Now, what's the difference between doing that? And I'm not trying to discount it. I'm just trying to understand it as well as possible. What's the difference between, you know, on the one hand saying that the possible outcomes, one way of doing it, Daz Cameron, you say the range is 30 to 70. He's the talented high schooler. Ian Happ is the talented collegiate. He has a track record, but also probably closer to his, you know, physical peak. So you say 40 to 60. What's the difference between doing that, between giving them both 50 and more, and say giving Cameron a higher possible future value, but also a higher risk grade?
Somebody suggested that in the comments. That is typically what scouts do. So, for instance, the way I do this and the way I do the minor league tool grades will be a lot of players with a lot of tools, specifically like hit tools, around 50, and then I'll use the 45 plus, the 50 plus, 55, those sorts of things to differentiate them. But if you were to read a scouts report saw that player for 5 games and wrote a report, you'd see a bunch of dudes writing up guys as a 40, guys as a 60, and then the office takes those reports, kind of smooths them together as like a proxy for if we saw every game, we would think this, but we're going to use these 3 reports, which means 15 games. And so you then figure out, okay, he could be a 60, this guy in low A. Could be a 60, has the tools to be a 60. This guy saw him hit well, so he put him as a 60. If he's hitting poorly, which he does sometimes also, he could be a 40. And so then sort of the office smooths it together. And since the majority of my experience with teams was in more of an office environment and then going out to see players rather than a scout on the road environment, I'm used to getting the final answer of, like, if I'm presenting to the GM, we should trade for this guy in low A over this guy in low A. He's going to see, all right, we've got a 4, a 6, and a 5 on the hit tool for this guy, and a 5, a 6, and a 5 for the hit tool on this guy. All right, so they have similar upside, but maybe one guy's a little more consistent. And I'm trying to give you sort of the average of those grades as a way to, you know, to give you the overall value rather than necessarily the range of possibilities. I could easily give Daz Cameron a 6 and then put his risk at a 4, and you would just be responsible for taking that 4 above average risk grade and spreading it across his tool grades based on what the text report tells you. Oh, there's some questions about the bat. Okay, so the 4 risk means that 60 bat could be more like a 40. I feel like that's going a little too far, making the reader do some work there. And I'd rather him read this and be able to figure out Daz Cameron has a higher upside, which I think anyone could guess with a high school player versus a college player in sort of a similar range, than make them do a bunch of legwork to figure that out.
Now, you've had the opportunity to work in some organizations. I feel like my exposure to draft day, the mechanics of draft day, you know, involves a bunch of dudes, you know, in the front, from the front office, sitting in a room, and they have either, like, magnetic, names of players with magnetics that can stick onto a literal board, or maybe there's some sort of written, written whiteboard type of situation. But I'm curious, can you tell us a little bit about what that day is like, and also, if this sort of thing exists, and I would assume in a much expanded form, in 0 organizations, half of the organizations, all of the organizations?
Wait, does what exist and how?
This sort of thing, like the sortable draft board, where, I mean, I assume that if for amateur players, scouts are submitting reports and these things are being, codified, standardized, and put into some sort of database.
So all 3 of the teams that I worked for, the draft room and the draft process and the draft board were all almost exactly the same. And I take it that basically all 30 teams are like that, which I'll explain in a second. One of the teams I worked for, there was sort of a computer system with this sort of information where you could type in, give me college pitcher under the age of 22, and give me, fastball command above average, average velo above 88, and 2 off-speed pitches 50 or better. And I actually remember I did that, and it spit out a guy we had like a low round grade on. That was one of the specific things I did, was that search. And it spit out a guy that was supposed to go in like the 7th to 10th round range, and it was Kyle Hendricks. And that was one of the things where I took to my boss and I was like, hey, this feels like the kind of player we should be targeting that seems to be undervalued, especially if it's a small school guy with great numbers. And it gave us one player. And he seems like a lower round guy. Like, that's a guy we could conceivably, not have to fly up the board that far and get him. And then me and my boss called the area scout. He was like, yeah, I don't like him. We're probably not going to draft him. Like, don't worry about it. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of a bummer. But yeah, and I did a similar search, ended up with Sean Gilmartin, who I thought was maybe a little underrated for some of the similar reasons, and he ended up not being that great. So not to say I'm some
genius. Still in the major leagues.
Yeah, but he was like a late first rounder that, turned into like a low end big leaguer, which is kind of I'd say medium to slightly below average, outcome. But anyway, so yeah, teams have those sorts of things. They are more for the people in the office to get to offer what they can offer, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, here's all our information. We're going to make some picks. You use this info and see if you can add anything to the equation. But the typical process is, every team I know of has magnets with, you slide the name on the magnet, put it on the board. I've also, in my years of baseball, created entire magnet boards full of every guy in our minor league system, probably 3 dozen times. I'm very well versed in how to do that and how to use the specific tab margins in how you print out the labels off the printer.
Jealous.
Yeah. And you know those like black crates that you see at like grocery stores?
Yeah.
If those are filled with the magnets, like all the way to the top, they weigh like 50 pounds. It is the heaviest thing you've ever picked up.
It's just relative metal, basically, right? I mean.
No, it's like rubber. It's like a hockey puck, but when it's that dense, it's very heavy.
Yeah.
And so when you have to move all the boards from upstairs to downstairs or whatever, or to the temporary draft room, you need some people to do that.
Yeah, anyway. Whatever, I would say whatever your merits are, Kylie, being a giant dude is not chief among them.
Well, I will say when I was on Jonah Carey's podcast yesterday, he said I was the most eligible bachelor in Atlanta, so maybe it should be.
Hmm. You know, maybe being the most eligible bachelor in that city is not a great distinction.
Shots fired at Atlanta. Anyway, so the typical process is they'll start, you know, you want me to walk through the whole process? I find this interesting, so I imagine other people.
Yeah, go ahead and say it.
So the area scouts will get with their regional cross checkers. So the idea is area scout is, for example, we'll have the, you know, southern two-thirds of Florida and Puerto Rico, or Alabama and Georgia, or Tennessee, Mississippi, and Arkansas. You know, something roughly that size, or density of players. Regional cross-checkers, so like Southeast, Midwest, West, sometimes Northeast, will meet with their area scouts, which is usually four or five guys. The area scouts will go over all the players and sort of all the things that aren't in the report. They'll communicate to the cross-checker. They'll make any last-second adjustments, talk about signability, medical stuff, all the stuff that's not in the report, or sort of the last-second things. So that all happens. Sometimes it'll happen in the major league city. Sometimes it'll happen at the house of the cross-checker or the house of the area scout, whatever. And then
would they enjoy snacks during that?
Absolutely. There's probably some beer as well. Because everyone knows where these players are going to go and who they are. There's usually a handful of guys they actually need to talk about. But it's like a nice formality to make sure, you know, everything the area scout wants to say is heard.
Right.
So the vast majority of teams have in the room, they have, you know, GM kind of will go in and out. He'll be there for the first day, usually not quite as much for the other days. You'll have your VPs, cross-checkers, national and regional. You have your scouting director. You'll have the office people. So you'll have, you know, directors of, you know, analytics. Usually pro scouting will be in and out. Player development will definitely be in there in a big way. The pitching and hitting coordinators usually have seen a handful of players. And then you'll also have, like, the support people from the office, assistant baseball ops, those sorts of people. Some teams will bring all of their area scouts. I'd say, like, maybe 8 or 10 teams will do that. And some teams bring none of them. And I would say the majority of teams will bring one or two. It's like a rotating thing. Mm-hmm. And some teams will just let whoever the local area scout is just be an extra guy to come help. But typically, it is a room that is run by scouting directors and then regional and national cross-checkers. So typically, the in-the-room building the board is a 2, maybe 3-week process. And for like the last week and a half, all of those people I mentioned are in the room all the time. GM and president might be in and out, but all of those support people are in pretty much around the clock. And they just sit there and talk about players. And they'll organize it in different ways. So some teams, to keep focus, will start at the bottom of the board and then work their way up, because typically the scouts will be more interested in the really good players. And so if you do them at the beginning, they'll kind of lose focus by the end, because they're just sitting in this room like 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. all day for 3 weeks. So you can see people losing focus there.
Yeah, I was going to say that is so many, because there's, what, 40 rounds now?
Yeah, and it's a lot of questions like, hey, this JUCO shortstop you've seen one game from Texas versus this high school shortstop you've seen for the last 3 years from Florida. Which one do you want? And you're just like, I mean, that's tough enough. Imagine if you're trying to compare 6 of them that are all completely different at the same time, but they're being lumped together because they're all shortstops that are, you know, 18 or 19. So you can imagine how if it's just those sorts of questions you haven't really considered all day long. And sometimes it'll be 6 guys and you're the Southeast cross-checker and you've seen 3 of them and you haven't seen the other 3, but you're asked to have an opinion based on what everybody else said so that, you know, you can have some impact on the process. So it can be pretty mentally taxing if you're one of the guys. And actually, one of the teams I worked for made a system because they noticed that, one scout would say something and the other ones wouldn't want to disagree with them. And so when the scouting director would say, all right, compare these 6 guys, the analytics guy would make a survey for those 6 players and it would pop up on the screens of all 6 cross-checkers and they would rank them themselves, and then it would get sent to the analytics guy. He would show it to the scouting director, and the scouting director would put those players in that order on the board to try to make the process as objective as possible.
It's amazing. It seems like it's an exercise because of the vast, not only is there all of this information available, and sometimes it's, you know, it's, you're essentially just splitting hairs, but also you have different personalities in a room witnessing other people making comments of varying degrees of strength. It seems like an experiment designed to identify as many sorts of biases as possible that humans can exhibit.
And you can imagine that, you know, these high-level scouts tend to be over the age of 50, played pro ball, you know, not to be mean, but typically aren't the most sort of intellectually curious people in the world, and maybe aren't noticing these biases, especially since even if they did notice them, they've been doing the same way for 15 years. And so you're, even if you recognize that it's not a perfect process, you're not going to be the one to speak up and say, hey, we've been doing it wrong for 15 years. My life has been a lie. Like, you're not going to yell that out. And so a lot of times these analytics.
I would love to be a driver. My life has been a lie. That'd be good. Just that.
You would say that in your first draft room on the first day. You're like, yeah. What have I done?
Yeah. But just the momentary burst of self-realization would be very satisfying as a spectator, as long as the person came out of it on the other end stronger or, you know, at least wiser than before.
Well, and there's definitely moments where one of the cross-checkers or directors or somebody that's sort of in the process will be like, my brain's fried. I need to get a drink or get a smoke. I need to come back in 20 minutes. And they'll be like, all right, 20-minute break. You know, everybody take a break. And then usually like the office support people, which is kind of where I was identified, we'd all kind of huddle and be like, that thing he said 5 minutes ago, that didn't make any sense, did it? And then you go over to the director and be like, that thing he said 5 minutes ago didn't make any sense. Maybe ask him about that again when he comes back, and they'll kind of open up a discussion.
Right.
But there's other times where there's a lot of double checking. So when you're talking about, like, let's say your team doesn't pick until 50, and those six shortstops that you were asked to compare are all, you know, sort of the targets around 50, maybe you're leaning toward taking a hitter with your first pick, and those are the targets, you'll talk about those six players 8 different times for an hour each time. Like, it'll get beaten to death.
Yeah. But how do you make a 38th round pick?
Well, so that's how you typically will build the board. A lot of times you'll start from the bottom, work your way up. I think most teams start from the top, work their way down. Typically they'll do an ordinal ranking of anywhere from 50 to 80 players, basically saying whoever's the highest on this board, we will take.
Mm-hmm.
But then obviously I've been there at times in the third or fourth round where, oh, number 29 on our board's still there, and then we just take number 37. Usually because of some unspoken reason about, you know, signability or, you know, something that didn't find its way onto the board necessarily in the ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get, you know, typically if you have, you know, say pick in the middle of the round for, you know, every round, that, 80 to 100 players that you have ranked in order, you'll get 6 or 7 of them. And then once you get beyond that, then you get to the point where it's basically the cross-checkers are making the call. The scouting director hasn't seen most of these guys. The VPs usually haven't seen them. Guys in the office have less to offer because, you know, have less sort of reliable information. If you're talking about a high school guy, it's how signable is he? Call him. All right, how much does he want? Is anyone else calling him? Can we wait 2 rounds to take him? Because this college guy might go next. And then usually after that 80, the board is broken down into positions. Or high school, college, or there's various ways to do it, but it's usually position. So it'll be all the shortstops in one area, and you'll just be looking at the top of each position. And once you get to like the 10th or 12th round, you're done sort of taking on sort of who's the best player at the position, who's the top player on that 80 player board. It's our short season team doesn't have a shortstop yet. Who's the best guy that could play there? All right, that's the top guy at that board. All right, is there anybody else at the tops of the positional rankings that we think is clearly better than this guy? And once you get past about the 12th round, that's not the case anymore. We're like, all right, that's the shortstop. Let's take him. If he doesn't, who's the backup plan? And then usually the cross-checkers will get up, walk up to the board, sort of talk in hushed tones with the scouting director, maybe swap some information they've been getting off the phone in the hallway. And that's sort of the collaborative, fast-paced world of like the 13th through 40th round where it's hey, we might have an extra 300K left over. All right, we'll go over to the signability board. Typically, there will be a separate area for signability guys and medical guys. So it's either medical guys either taken off the board or almost taken off the board or just big question marks. that may be an option if he slips to the 15th round and, you know, his price comes down and maybe the doctor says we got a better opinion on this than we did before. Or a signability guy typically means either he wants at least as much as we think he's worth, probably more. So he's now sort of a wild card. Typically those are the guys that slide, are the people that are on the signability board. And usually with the way the draft is now, as you're getting toward the end of the top 10 rounds, you'll be like, all right, we've got, you know, 400K laying around. So let's target a guy that maybe we could get for 400 or 500. It's these three guys. All right, move them over to the main board. Let's find a place to fit them in. Cross checkers who have the regions where those players are from, call your area guys, call the player, get an idea of, you know, where him and his agent are. And sometimes there'll be guys who set their number at 750 that you call them in the 13th round, they're like, we'll sign for 150. And it's basically the team that calls them first is the one that gets them. I mean, that happens all the time now.
It seems like a lot of, especially if you're in the, you know, the personnel, the development side of things, you know, you are a scouting director, you're a cross checker. It seems like you got to spend a lot of time on the phone.
Yeah, there's a lot of phone, which I found, you know, girls around my age don't like talking on the phone anymore. They like texting. I think they like being able to control the process. So I would say girls in their 20s wouldn't be great at this.
Right. What about men in their 50s?
Well, they have no choice but to love it. So.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it seems like so much talking and coordinating.
So then when you get to like the 30th and 40th rounds, this is usually, you know, day two and day three. So you're kind of like one of the jobs I had, I think in two of the rooms was once you get past the 20th round and it's basically one guy in the room has seen this player, you know, we're just saying like, hey, we could use a second baseman. Any second baseman you like, Greg? And Greg, the Southeast cross checker, is like, it's George Eric. I texted this guy's pretty good. Said he signed for, you know, 5K. We'll be like, all right, pull him off the board. He's going next. And then, you know, goes and hands him and his little draft magnet to the guy on the phone that calls in the pick on the conference call. And then my job was to stand on the board, and there's like a projector that'll show like the live feed that the big league teams get of who's getting picked. Mm-hmm. And it'll have like, you know, name, position, school, draft ID. And then those are all on the magnets on the board. And so as, you know, 38th round, so-and-so gets picked, I got to go find him on the board. And it was always super helpful when the cross checkers would be paying attention because they'd be like, he's not turned in, he's not on the board. Because there would be hundreds of players on the board and you don't know any of these players at this point. And you're just like looking through every single name trying to find them. And every like 9 seconds, there's another pick happening. And so eventually it would get to be, there'd be three or four guys up there and they'd split it up for, you know, I've got the infielders, I'll take the outfielders, I'll take the pitchers, I'll take the relievers. That sort of thing to try to keep up with it. But it's like a real challenge where everyone in the room is half paying attention to the guy taking the magnets off the board. Cause obviously you don't want to be the team that drafts a guy in the 38th round that, you know, went in the third or fourth round cause nobody pulled his name off the
board. Yeah, I was wondering, have you ever witnessed that, a team attempt to draft a player who had already been drafted?
I remember one year somebody was drafted, I forgot who it was, Ryan Zimmerman, a junior college player. The same year that Ryan Zimmerman, the Nationals player, was drafted in like, you know, the fifth or sixth overall pick. Mm-hmm. And MLB goes, that player's already been drafted. The team goes, we know it's a different guy. And
yeah.
There's like a draft ID, which is usually I think you can double check before you say the name. Like, this guy taken, like the guy on the computer can check it. But mm-hmm. I think MLB just heard that guy's name. They're like, oh, that guy's taken. And the team's like, oh, it's not the same guy. Look at the draft ID. And they're like, oh, okay. But yeah, I don't know of too many times that happens. One of the other entertaining things is when there is a guest person saying the name of the player. Mm-hmm. So it's like the Dodgers are famous for every year they let Tommy Lasorda make one pick, and they'll get on and be like, the Dodgers are the greatest team in existence. They pick draft ID, and then he'll like mess the number up and then mess the name up and be like, go Dodgers, and screw Don Mattingly, and like hang up or something. Which is funny after 10 rounds of just the same people just mumbling into the phone.
They just let him have one. Is it someone he cares about, or does he just get a?
I think they usually try to make it somebody that that they want.
I heard this year he wants to try and draft Mike Piazza. Is that true?
No, I actually mentioned the Mattingly thing because it was sort of famous. I believe it was on like the stream you could get off the internet that Lasorda, the pick he got to make was the supplemental pick when the Dodgers drafted I think it was Preston Mattingly.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something about, like, you know, too late, Yankees, the year the Yankees wanted to take him. And I think I was working for the Yankees one of those years, and everybody was joking about it for the next couple of days that Tommy Lasorda was, like, smack-talking on the conference call.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
And he ended up being terrible, so I guess it wasn't.
Preston Mattingly.
Yeah,
Preston Mattingly.
Every now and then that'll happen, but it's usually, 40 or 38 of the 40 picks will be the same name or the same voice for every team saying it.
Yeah. Kylie.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything I've failed to ask you that you think is relevant to this draft board or this conversation we're having, which is probably, I'm guessing this is the last conversation we'll have before the draft begins on Monday.
I would imagine so. I guess as a teaser for the people, may already be another conversation not featuring Carson on Fangraphs.net.
Oh my God. Do you think it's occurred yet or not?
It has not occurred in real time. This may go up after that.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
It's hard to say.
I think we've covered most of it. I think the other things I haven't said here, I said in the intro post, just sort of the idea of what I'm trying to do here, but yeah. It seems a bit navel-gazy to continue for an entire hour talking about the thing I just did.
To be fair, this is good information too about, it led to a discussion about the draft room too, which I think is also captivating, fascinating.
Yeah, which I find interesting to know in, because it seems like also every year you'll hear a nugget from a friend in an office like, we took this guy, I thought we should have taken this guy, but I'm, low level enough, I can't yell that out, mm-hmm. but this was the information we had, this is what I thought, did you think we picked the right guy? Would you have taken the guy I wanted? Like, there's always a sort of an interesting conversation, at least one from...
Now, listen, you can't yell out that you would have taken another guy, but can you yell out, I am Spartacus?
Well, yeah, there's also, as you may guess, a lot of deference to experience in these offices or in these rooms, where it's like basically you can't get to be one of the scouts that matter in this room without scouting for at least 20 years and mm-hmm. signing multiple big leaguers and being very respected, which, again, it's hard to define who knows what they're doing in scouting, so you could sort of quibble with this guy's sort of a doofus. And I think everyone probably has a doofus that may not actually be that good, but the other guys are usually good. But yeah, if you're assistant baseball ops office guy that these scouts, barely know your name, like, you basically can't say anything unless someone says, hey, do we have his medical? Kylie, do we have his medical?
And yeah.
I'll type in like, yes, like, we do.
Yes, master, we do.
Yeah, that's about the extent of what you get to say openly in the room. And that also goes for like director of pro scouting sometimes. He'll see like a dozen players. He basically doesn't talk the entire time if that's all he's done. He just kind of sits and listens and just, pays attention. And obviously he's going to need to know about these players when they become pros, a month from now.
So it's valuable, though the experience is valuable for him, but his ability to contribute is limited. It's limited.
Yeah, and also there are teams, this is another thing that always surprises me about the draft is – people assume everyone's board looks about the same as the ones on the internet, and they always look completely different. So, like, one year I was working for a team, and basically the whole internet said we should have drafted such and such, and I asked one of our guys, we were supposed to take him at, 20 or 30 or 25 or wherever we were picking, and the internet thought we should take him this guy, and we had him ranked, 75. Why was that? And he was like, yeah, our scouts just never saw him hit. And it was just like, yeah, we know why people like him. Like, the swing looks good, and we think, he could play, that position, and, we like the body, but he just never hit for us. So, sorry. But I'd say half the league probably had him at, 18 or 20 or 25 or wherever they're supposed to have him.
So do you think that – is that just a reality of it, or do you think that that might reveal a lack of coverage?
Well, it's also the opinion about a high school player especially is defined by the area scout, the regional cross-checker, because they also are usually the ones that tell the national cross-checker and the VP and the director, come see this guy or don't come see this guy. So if the area scout doesn't like him for whatever reason, and then maybe the cross-checker comes in to check him out because he's, fourth or fifth rounder, even since this guy doesn't like him, and doesn't really like him, he's not going to go back, and he's not going to tell anyone else to go, and he's just going to get buried. And obviously, there are teams that think Daz Cameron's not a first-rounder. There are teams that probably have Daz Cameron in the top seven, on their board. So that happens especially with high school players pretty often. But For some reason, I say this every year multiple times, the internet is still like, you know, the Yankees picked 16, and, you know, this guy was 12th on everyone's board on the internet, and they didn't take him. Why not? And I was like, they might have thought he was a fourth-round pick. Like, that could be the reason why. And people just kind of laugh, like, oh, that's why the Yankees are terrible, because they don't have this guy wherever. And I was like, okay, well, the Yankees had Mike Trout higher than everyone else, so are you going to say all those guys are idiots, or you want to wait and see what happens? And even if they were wrong that time and another time, and Trout's the only time they've been right, like, it's still like it's a process with imperfect information on all fronts, and the internet opinion is often the smoothing over of what's there, and I don't think people realize the amount of smoothing that is happening.
A lot of very smooth.
It's the baby's bottom of baseball. Ooh, can we change the name Sortable Draft Board to the baby's bottom of baseball?
Yeah, we'll do it. It's effective immediately. People who are listening to this, it's already been changed.
Because you're the boss man now, so you can do such things.
Yeah, I don't know about boss man. I put hyphens into people's posts.
It's true.
That's mostly what I do. Like, if you want to say batted ball data, and you haven't put a hyphen between batted and ball, I'm going to do that because that is an adjectival phrase, is what that is. So I'm going to hyphenate it.
Have you ever considered doing a just you podcast and seeing how many people get to the end of it?
No.
I would recommend doing that just to get an idea of how long people can follow along the soliloquy of Carson Sestouli.
Just go inside myself. I don't have to. I don't know. I could have a podcast just it's me editing people's posts.
It would just be you mumbling, "Oh God, this
friggin'
again." This guy.
Friggin' name. Major League. That
should be the intro music, like a series of sounds you make while editing someone who wrote a poor post with like some EDM music and some reggaeton horns.
My wife. All right. You fulfilled your obligation,
Kylie. Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Carson. Yeah, I'm the lead prospect analyst for Fangraphs.com.
That has been well. Thank you, Kyler McDaniel. Thank you.
I'm gonna go moonlight on some other podcasts now.
That has been Kyler McDaniel, the lead prospect analyst for Fangraphs.com. Carson Sestouli. This has been Fangraphs Audio.